Welcome to the Health Innovation Podcast, produced by the AHSN Network and Accelerated Access Collaborative.
Hello and welcome everybody to the Health Innovation Podcast. My name's Phil Jennings. I'm a GP up on the Wirral, but also the Chief Officer for the Innovation Agency, which is one of the AHSNs on the Northwest Coast. We're talking today about inclisiran, which is something that's very close to my heart, no pun intended, in that this is a new medicine for cholesterol lowering that all the AHSNs have been very avidly involved with. And as usual, I'm joined by two distinguished guests. So first of all, Prof. Kosh Ray, who's the Professor of Public Health and Honorary Consultant Cardiology, and also a Director of the Imperial Centre for Cardiovascular Disease Prevention at Imperial College in London, and also a GP colleague of mine from Lincolnshire, Dr. Carl Deeney, who's one of the early adopters of inclisiran. So fellas, thanks very much for joining me today. So perhaps if I start with you, Kosh, tell us who you are, what you do, and what's your role with the inclisiran programme.
Thanks very much, Phil. So my name is Kaushik Ray. I'm Professor of Public Health and a Consultant Cardiologist at Imperial College and current President of the European Atherosclerosis Society. So I led the inclisiran development programmes over the last 7 years, leading to the approvals across the world for this innovative therapy. And within the NHS, I'm a senior advisor to NHS England, working with the Academic Health Sciences Centres and the Accelerated Access Collaborative, largely helping understand the data, how this fits in, and providing, I guess, guidance around how this can be adopted, in particular, into primary care.
Excellent. Thanks very much. And Carl, over to you. Again, tell us who you are and what your role is in the programme.
Yes, good morning. My name is Dr. Carl Deeney. I coincidentally qualify from Charing Cross and Westminster Medical School, which is part of Imperial these days. And I completed my VTS in the Oxford Deanery. I work in rural East Lincolnshire. Can't get much more rural than we are, and I've been there since late 2013. And I have a special interest in long-term conditions, especially cardiovascular conditions, and the impact of those conditions on patients' quality of life. And I'm passionate about implementing best practice in the primary care setting. And really, I'm here today talking about it from our point of view at a practice level, and how to deliver inclisiran to your patients.
Excellent. Thanks very much, both. So, Kosh, I'm going to start with you, if I may. So let's face it, a year or two ago, I'd never heard of inclisiran. So perhaps we can start by maybe you just unpacking for me what it is, how does it work, and how is it different from the other medicines that we're more familiar with for lipid management?
Okay, thanks, Phil. So I think the first thing to really set the scene is not just really understanding inclisiran and what it works, but really starting off with why it is we think about cholesterol-lowering therapies. So the first thing we've got to do is disentangle the use of cholesterol-lowering to reduce the risk of atherosclerotic cardiovascular disease, meaning heart attacks, strokes, dying from cardiovascular disease. Where we actually use cholesterol-lowering therapy is to reduce that. Now, some of these people will have high cholesterol levels, like familial hypercholesterolemia patients. But there may be many people, like those with diabetes, who have an accelerated risk of cardiovascular disease. Or if you've had a cardiovascular event, for example, you need cholesterol lowering. And what we know is 1 millimole of LDL lowering by any means over 5 years reduces cardiovascular risk by about 22%. So if we start with that, that's really the background and the basis to the entirety of the global data. We also know that cholesterol lowering through at least 4 different approaches has been proven to be beneficial. And again, the same 1 unit lowering, 22% relative risk reduction. So when we use statins, we actually increase the expression of LDL receptors, and that's why blood levels fall. But we know when we need to achieve greater reduction, so statins will give you about 50% lowering. But when we need to achieve even greater reductions, because some people are at such high risk, they need greater reductions, you're going to have to use combination therapies. And that's where drugs like ezetimibe, potentially bempedoic acid, come into the mix as an add-on. What we've realized is that though statins and other therapies like ezetimibe make more cholesterol receptors, these are destroyed by a protein called PCSK9 that circulates in blood. So you make more receptors, but they're paradoxically being destroyed. So anything that reduces either PCSK9 in blood or that stops it binding to the LDL receptor will basically give you additional LDL lowering. And the way we've done that previously are with these injectable therapies called monoclonal antibodies. This is a bit like having a bucket collecting everything that's in blood, PCSK9, but you're going to have to replace the bucket every 2 weeks. Now, the main source of PCSK9 is the liver. 80% of what's in blood comes from the liver. So if you switch off the tap, the source, the liver, you can lower 80% of what's in blood. And the way we do that over the last 20 years, the discovery of so-called small interference RNA or gene silencing, this is basically the link between your DNA and the protein. And the link is the messenger RNA. So inclisiran is the first cholesterol-lowering therapy to use this approach. It's taken up by the liver within 4 hours. It doesn't go anywhere else. Small amount freely filtered through the kidney. And every mammalian cell essentially has a machinery to switch off protein production. So we give it a target, which is the message for PCSK9. And it breaks that down, which gives us a highly specific mechanism of action. And what that results in is by lowering circulating PCSK9 by 80%, with this highly effective system, we can give 2 injections a year that will give you an additional 50% lowering of LDL cholesterol.
That's brilliant. And I suppose the thing there, Kosh, right at the end there, it's not just a little push we're talking about here, is it, with combination therapy? So even a patient who's on maximally tolerated lipid lowering, conventional lipid lowering therapy, the addition of inclisiran really makes a big difference to them.
Oh, absolutely. And so, you know, let's say you've got a patient who has an LDL of 4 starting at 8 because they've got familial hypercholesterolemia on and they're on a statin. This will bring these people down to 2. And that's with twice a year injection. If you've had a heart attack, if you've got accelerated cardiovascular disease, premature disease, you had a stroke, peripheral arterial disease, and you've got somebody with an LDL of 2.6, you're going to bring them down to 1.3. And remember, you're born with a level, if you don't have FH, of about 0.3 to 0.5 millimoles.
Great, okay. So what I'd like to focus on, if I may, with you, Kosh, is the evidence so far. So one of the first questions that we're being asked as AHSNs is, where's the evidence for this molecule? And perhaps we can just also distill the difference between the evidence and outcomes, because again, I know many colleagues are asking me about outcomes and what we can expect in terms of outcomes with inclisiran.
Yeah, that's a really important question. And I think it's really important that people understand how these therapies are approved and what the background to that is. So as a reminder, because of the understanding of the role that cholesterol and LDL plays in atherosclerosis, development and cardiovascular disease, every drug that we have has basically been approved for LDL lowering before there was a cardiovascular outcomes trial. So we had that for statins, we had that for ezetimibe, we've had that for the PCSK9 monoclonal antibodies, and we have that for bempedoic acid, and now we have that for inclisiran. And that's basically because there is sufficient safety data that the drug can be used in general populations at scale, and usually regulators will also want an ongoing larger study which will provide additional safety data. They've been happy with the safety data that they've seen, and they would also rely on additional data beyond that and post-marketing surveillance. And at the same time, because regulators understand the role of LDL in atherosclerosis, they're happy to provide that approval. Now, there are two large outcome studies, Victorian to Prevent and Orion 4, which is being done in England and in the United States. Now, these have recruited, or at least Orion 4 is more than halfway recruited, and we expect the results of those in a few years' time. So basically, we have sufficient data for LDL lowering, we have sufficient data for safety, and that's why these therapies are approved. And it's really important to understand that difference between having a license and a label for LDL lowering and how that fits in to that additional data for cardiovascular outcomes. I mean, this is a bit like blood pressure lowering. You would believe blood pressure lowering by any means reduces cardiovascular events if you have sufficient safety data.
That's really helpful. And I suppose, therefore, there's no reason to expect that those improvements in clinical outcomes will follow, just as they have for all of those other medicines that you've mentioned. If I could just pick up on safety, because I think that's the other most common question that I get asked. We're launching inclisiran in primary care direct to eligible patients. Can you just tell me, in terms of the data pool that currently exists for safety, what does that tell us about inclisiran?
Yeah, so there are a number of studies that were submitted in the packaging for the approvals. So firstly, there's the 3,500 patients over 18 months, and it was the same amount of data for bempedoic acid and the same amount of data for each of the monoclonals that led to their approval as well. So in terms of numbers, we've got exactly the same. The only thing you basically see is a small difference in injection site adverse events. And this basically could be a bit of itching. Somebody says, oh, the injection stung, or, you know, somebody noticed 1 millimeter of redness. These are mild to moderate in severity. They don't recur. And essentially, there is no monitoring of liver function, kidney function, platelets, or anything else that's needed. All you need to check is after the first injection, 30 to 45 days later, that the patient has additional LDL lowering from your starting level. And that's all you need to do. There's been additional data, which was at least three years at the time of filing, open label extension. And there's basically now that's continued through to another 4 years of extended follow-up. We've got another trial, that's Orion 3. We'll be presenting that later on this year. And there's also another study called Orion 8, where the 3,500 patients went into an open label extension, and we'll have 3 years of extended data. But also remember, we've got more than 7,000 patients with about 5 years now since the first patient went into Orion 4. And we've got additional safety data from there. And data safety monitoring committees monitor those studies. And there have been no additional surprises that we haven't seen in the original study. So, and I've been using it from a routine clinical perspective since last September, probably got somewhere close to about 100 patients now on the treatment. And you don't see anything different in real world use that you didn't see in the clinical trials.
That's really helpful. And I'm sure for many people who are listening, it's really great to hear that we do have experience and there is no indication that there's a safety issue. So that's great to know. I'm going to move us on now, if I may, because other than the molecule itself, the way that we're actually launching this program is slightly different. So we're using what's called a population health management approach. So I'm going to ask you both what that is and what you think about that. And perhaps you can focus on maybe what the pros and cons are of the population health management approach. So Carl, we haven't heard from you yet. So welcome back to the conversation. Tell us about what's different about this launch with inclisiran.
Indeed. I think there's some very important facts that we should be considering. Cardiovascular disease causes about one death every 3 minutes in the UK and incurs a cost of about £7.4 billion in England per year alone. And I think that's a very important factor to consider, because you put it in the context of the NHS cardiovascular plan, the ABC, you've got A for atrial fibrillation, B for controlling blood pressure, and C is aimed at our ability to control cholesterol and reduce the risks associated with that. And this particular medication is ideally suited to primary care. It's very simple to store, it's very simple to give, and in our very time-pressured GP consultations, in our primary care environment, and we are super busy, it's relatively simple and straightforward to bolt into your everyday practice. We started with delivering the medication through our PA, but that's spread through our nurses and anybody who's qualified as an HCA. There's many different flavours these days, so I'm not going to cover them all. But people who are qualified to give vaccinations are able to give it. And it's a relatively straight, it's very straightforward, actually, medicine to give. And our patients have been very, very receptive. I think out of all of our patients, and I think we've, I was talking to somebody this morning and they mentioned the magic number 70. I think we've done 70 prescriptions so far. It's a rolling program, obviously. We started just about Christmas time, just after Christmas. And I think we've had one person who declined it because it was a needle and they were needle phobic. Otherwise, patients have actually come to us and asked us for this medication. And the beauty about it is once you've given it, it's given. So you load it 0 months, 3 months, and then every 6 months. So the burden is controllable. You're giving the injection twice a year. And, you know, our team have all embraced it. So this is excellent. And the patients like it. And I genuinely mean that. We haven't had it. And I know there are obviously potential side effects, but we haven't really seen those. The patients haven't complained of them. And like I said, there's only one patient who was completely needle phobic who's declined it. But everybody, in fact, we've had them asking where it's outside license, unfortunately, at this time. And hopefully the licenses will change in the future. They've asked it about it because they prefer to try and have this kind of medicine instead of yet another tablet. Now, I'm not saying that we shouldn't be using tablets because, of course, we should. But it has been well received by our patients.
That's brilliant. Carl, I'm going to come back to you in a minute because I am interested to learn about how you set your service up. But Kosh, can I just ask you, so launching with this kind of high volume, low cost approach, that's a fairly new thing. We haven't seen that traditionally. What do you think about that? Is that a model for future molecule launches in this country, do you think?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the more you learn, the more you realise actually that if you're thinking about population, and the global population, the UK population, we have one of the best, if not the best, primary care systems in the world. And this is where the population sits. Non-communicable diseases, you don't want people coming to a secondary care clinic. You want the really difficult cases coming there. And we just don't have the workforce in secondary or tertiary care. So if we start and focus much more on preservation of health, we will be able to do this in primary care much more effectively. There are a number of other therapies that are coming through, all using this type of technology and approach. They're safe, they're effective, and we've got the workforce potentially that can actually deliver. They've got the expertise. And that's what's been very different, because usually with new therapies, there was always this kind of, well, let's go to secondary care and let's see it rolled out from there. But that's actually delayed implementation and innovation. And if you compare this with therapies that are restricted to secondary care, how many secondary care clinics do you have? You can't possibly reach the population. So I think it's really important that we do this. It was really difficult doing this through COVID, and perhaps, you know, waiting for NICE approvals meant that the usual education that we would have done in the run-up to it could have been done in a slightly different way. But we're here, we've started, and I'm really delighted to hear, you know, colleagues embracing this in primary care, because it's really easy.
Excellent. So let's talk a little bit more about that. So in your practice, Carl, how did you find the eligible patients? I know there are a number of tools, one of which has just recently launched into EMIS and TPP, but you've obviously been doing this for a little while. What process did you undertake to find who was eligible for this new treatment?
Okay, if I may, I'd just like to add one little point just to run from the previous one while I come into that piece. But all of this long-term condition management, when I originally trained as a physician and then I defected to the dark side or the light side, depending on how you look at it. And all of those cases that I used to see sitting in my waiting room as a junior trainee in the late 90s, they now don't go to hospital. They all come to us. So in general practice, we do all of that work. And so this kind of management piece is just part of our normal day-to-day work, in my opinion. It's just yet another medicine in our armory. And it's really important because we need to be able to address these issues, especially with regard to the sort of health inequalities that can occur. And we can do that. We are best placed to do that. These are the kind of medicines that we need as in primary care to look after our patients in the best possible way. And I'm really quite passionate about that. So to go on to answer your question, really, is that case finding for inclisiran is pretty straightforward. We have a very simple approach. We do have a coordinator. There's my PA, Meredith, coordinates the lipid service because it's kind of grown a bit since this has come along. And it needs to be part of the whole team. It's not just one person, because you can't deliver this to your patients unless the whole team are on board. So we upskilled our entire clinical team. We provided them with readily available support materials that you can get through various agencies, including your own. And we actually ran in-house educational sessions, which is something we do anyway as a teaching practice.
Okay. Can I ask you about blood testing? I know that's been a problem in some areas of the country, particularly when the NICE guidance refers to LDL level specifically. What approach have you taken? Have you been more pragmatic, or have you got any advice to colleagues around blood specifically?
Okay, well, there have been lots of challenges with blood specifically over time, so I could be here all day talking about that. However, I would say this, that we started our spring clean back earlier this year, and we started catching up because we knew we were going to come out of COVID. And we knew that we would need data for our patients. So we started a program of catching up with all our bloods, including cholesterol. So in January, when we ran our initial searches, we found only 14 cases. But by March, when we'd played catch up, we actually had 77 possible cases. And we were identifying these through the Arden search tool. Many practices in the country use Ardens these days, and they have a search tool that's very helpful. So that's really, it's that simple a drug to use. You literally, you do a lipid profile, work out your LDL-C, and away you go. It's that simple. Follow-up bloods, obviously there is specific guidance about it. Because we were using it kind of early adopters, we did have a little cheeky look at some of our patients early, a month in, because we were just interested to see what else was happening. Plus, they were scheduled for other things at the same time. And so I do know that my colleague found a couple, but she reported seeing 50% drops in their LDL in that early phase. I know that's not what we're supposed to do, but she just had a little look on a couple of them with their permission, obviously. Yeah, so it's not onerous. There's no adjustment for liver function. There's you have to be cautious in severe liver disease, but that's same with many drugs. There's no renal considerations. There, even in end stage, there's no consideration. And also, there's no consideration with regard to age. You literally have a syringe, it has the medicine in it, you give the syringe. It is straightforward as that. There are no dose adjustments or special monitoring. So it's not like warfarin doing INRs or DOACs doing FBCs and UNEs and UNE, LFT and FBC. There's nothing like that to be done at regular points. In fact, I feel a bit of a fraud coming on, because actually it is really that straightforward. You know, we all give vitamin B12 injections, don't we? I can't think of a practice I know that doesn't give them. And it's the same principle of that. It is really, really simple. And there's very simple criteria. NICE have laid out a beautiful chart. You follow it. There are cases that you can follow, and I can sit here all day long and tell you about our cases and how they match them. and I can tell you about all their results, but they've been very good. Patients have been very receptive to the medicine. We haven't had side effects, apart from one person declined it because they don't like a needle. But apart from that, it's been pretty straightforward.
So we saw during the vaccination program that there were certain populations that were fairly hesitant with regards to taking up the vaccine. Obviously, inclisiran's injectable as well, which is a slightly new approach. Again, have you found that you've had any challenges with particular groups of patients in terms of your early experience? Or again, has it been more or less universally welcomed?
Has been universally welcomed. Honestly, we've had patients phone us and ask us for the medicine. In fact, we even had a secondary care doctor from a faraway hospital write to us to see if we could work out a way for the patient to receive this medicine. Bearing in mind, in their particular case, it would have been a primary prevention, was outside the licensed and agreed rules of giving. So the answer was unfortunately no at this time. Maybe that will change in the future. My fingers are crossed.
And I can see you're nodding. Obviously, people can't see you nodding, Kosh, but that's your experience as well in terms of patient acceptability.
Yeah, I think in general, patients in the same position as Carl, I mean, this is not a lifestyle choice. It's not a case of I'm on a statin and I'm going to basically switch this. This is a treatment that we're using under NICE for additional LDL lowering with an LDL above 2.6. Now, why is that? Well, if you've got established cardiovascular disease and a heart attack, a stroke, you want to bring their LDLs down further. And that's what you're doing. It is licensed for primary prevention, high-risk primary prevention, familial hypercholesterolemia, primary prevention. It's just not paid for by NICE, so people would have to pay for it themselves. But, you know, this whole approach is trying to get 300,000 patients with established cardiovascular disease whose LDL is above 2.6 and basically will drop their LDLs by about 1.3 millimoles. And that's going to be a 30% risk reduction. That's what we're talking about.
So I think that's been a really helpful conversation. I think, you know, from the perspective of evidence and safety, I think we've really bottomed that out from your earlier comments, Kosh. And Carl, clearly you've had a really positive experience, both from a clinical perspective, and it's obvious your patients like it too. Just in terms of wrapping up, maybe I could just ask you both just to give us some final thoughts as to what you would say to colleagues who are potentially looking at setting up a service to deliver inclisiran to their patients. Any last words of advice that you might give them? So I'll start with you this time, Carl.
Well, I think case finding is important. So there are tools that you can use to find cases. Plus, when you upskill your team, they will find cases as you go along. So two of my nurses were looking at two cases last night. One that was originally pegged as somebody should have it. Actually, they didn't have persistently elevated LDL. And another one who has just recently moved to our practice that we weren't expecting. And my colleague Lauren picked it up and we arranged for them to have their jab because that was the best option for them. You've got to remember this is part of the armamentarium of medicines that we use to treat our patients. So they are part of the rest of the review. So it doesn't mean that we're going to skip all of the other bits and pieces that we're doing anyway. So all the lifestyle pieces, tobacco use, blood pressure, weight, etc., screening for other conditions, and of course always thinking about the other effects that occur with long-term condition management. But it is part of that whole piece. So it doesn't gazump anything. It's literally a new tool to put into our armamentarium so we can do our jobs better as GPs, and it is well received by patients, which is really good news.
Yeah, super. Thanks, Carl. And then Kosh, over to you for some final reflections, and again maybe you could tell us why we should be supporting the use of inclisiran for eligible patients.
Well, I think the main reason for supporting the use of inclisiran is that you've got a whole group of people that essentially who now become eligible under NICE for additional LDL lowering as a means to reduce cardiovascular risk. And these are people who wouldn't qualify for other therapies under NICE. So, you know, essentially we're in an incredibly fortunate position in the UK. There are going to be other people. It's not just about inclisiran, of course. We have a really good lipid implementation program. There are several therapies that are now available. And that's great for patients because it means that for some patients who can't tolerate statins, we can use things like bempedoic acid, combination therapies with ezetimibe. I think the key thing here is for colleagues to really understand about the importance of combination therapies for those at highest risk, just as we manage blood pressure with two or three different medications. And people will find that this is a lot easier than they expect, you know, having reminders, electronic diary reminders set up for 6 month injections. It's really easy. And it's a lot easier than you suspect, actually.
Thanks, Kosh. Well, listen, gents, thanks very much for your time. Clearly, we've all got an opportunity to make a major impact in the challenge of cardiovascular disease here. So just remains for me to formally say thanks to Prof. Kosh Ray and Dr. Carl Deeney. And maybe I can finish by saying we're here on behalf of the AHSN network. All 15 AHSNs are supporting this programme. So if you're listening and wondered where you can get some help to set up your own inclisiran service, then please do reach out to your local AHSN. We're here to help you. Thanks very much for listening.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Thanks, Phil.